Kevin, what brought you to Maldon?
Well, I was born here 1955, and I was born at St Peter's Hospital. So I've lived here all my life. Earliest memories are probably going to school at All Saints, which is London Road. So education wise, we went from the All Saints School and then progressed to what was then became the Plume School when it became comprehensive. Up until that time, it was the grammar school. I think there was definitely sort of parents that didn't really like this amalgamation, because the grammar school suddenly was downgraded to a comprehensive school. We was the first year, so I was coming up to my last year of secondary education. So I had 1 year, it was then the grammar school, but the comprehensive school. So I've lived here all the time.
Didn't we have Gate Street?
Yes, I lived in Gate Street, if you know where that is. Very small, as I remember, very small. With an outside loo, if you can, you know, sort of think like that. But excuse me, there was
no bathroom,
outside loo. Winters were colder, so it wasn't unusual to be frozen pipes, yeah. No flush. And my father, bless him, was trotting around with a blowtorch, trying desperately to unfreeze the pipes. So lingering wasn't really an option. so we lived there. I'm surprised to find, well, my father was in a position where he was able to buy this house, which was very unusual. I think it would have been about 53, 54. He knew a builder who had worked on this house, and he offered it for sale to my father. Now, it was unusual in those days to buy your house. I don't know how he achieved it. My guess is he joined the army at 17, was stationed in India during the Raj and the handover. So he didn't come home for 6 years. So I'm guessing that all the money he saved enabled him to purchase or at least get a mortgage on the property, and that's how it was achieved. So I do remember it being very small, and I do remember it being quite cold.
Were there brothers and sisters?
I have a brother called Michael. Mm-hmm. We had a very small bedroom because it was only two bedrooms, and my father built us some bunks. I think I had the bottom bunk, being the oldest, and he had the top bunk. But when you stood up, there was only room really for one to stand up. It was that small, as you might imagine. I think the houses may have been built for the brewery, or it's either brewery or Maltings brewery, I think comes to mind, which was over the road on what became EEV. So I think they were the houses for those workers. So that's why they were small. It was like a tied cottage, and the whole terrace was housing for the brewery. So yes, this is in the days of when you scratched any messages or thing or drawings or cartoons on the inside of the windows, your bedroom window, because it frosted on the inside, and it was a regular occurrence. So I still can't remember being cold. We had
one. You had to go to work with shorts, school with shorts and long socks, whatever the weather.
Yes, you did go to school. So I can't remember being cold, but we had just the one fire in what was the front room, as my mother would call it, the front room. So the bottom of the house, the lower level of the house, was split into two. So you had a very small room. And the scullery, as it was called, my mother was called the scullery, and the front room for special occasions, and which is where the open fire was. But it was, it felt snug, it felt warm, you know. But all the gardens at the back, they weren't gardens as such, but there was a walkway from one end right through to the other. So you walk through everyone's little, as my mother would say again, patch. And so, but it was neighbourly. So everyone knew everyone. And then people started putting a little fence in, so, you know, that was their little bit. Especially if they had a small dog or something. A couple of neighbours had small dogs, so they put a little fence in. So that was really how it... That was the start of it all.
Mm-hmm. And where were you living?
Well, my father was in the war, really trained to be a pilot, and we lived in Burnham. He came to Maldon, and he went to the Buick suite, and he met my mother. So it's the Buick suite, it's exactly as it was all those years ago at a dance.
This is now called the Signet Room,
isn't it? Yeah. Yes, it is.
Exactly the same building. And of course they got together, went to the cinema and everything else, and they decided they'd get married eventually, didn't they? But prior to that, my father was a teacher after that. He came out of the Air Force and went to Cambridge after the war, they were desperately short of teachers, so he went to Cambridge and trained, he's always had a crash course, literally, to be a teacher. And he did ask if he could be as far away from Burnham as where he originated, but he ended up in Maldon. So they had a house near the park, which were two brick houses which were dedicated to teachers, so they would have somewhere to stay. Prior to that, they lived in rented accommodation up Market Hill and all sorts of places. That was, as soon as they got the house, they had me. But they only had one. I don't know. That was just the way it was. So I was the only child. So I grew up in Maldon, went and did all the things, same as you did, really. Mm-hmm. And that was it. Until, well, do you want to carry on or?
Where are we up to now?
Well, I'm up to where. I'm up to where I arrived and grew up. Of course, I went to school. Carry on a bit more. I went to school at the primary, Maldon County Primary School. And same school as Kevin, and I was probably the first child to actually attend the secondary school where my father, who taught, it was tricky. It wasn't easy to be in the same area, because when I went to school, I had to call him sir. I had to take on that role. So as soon as he walked me home, it was dad. So it's a very bizarre way, but that was in that time. That's how it was. And then after I went and successfully got through, a lot of the teachers then brought their children to go to the school that they were teaching in. I suppose they were worried of how you'd settle down or how the other children would behave to you. But I didn't have any problems. And that was when the school was a girls' and boys' school. I was the heads, wasn't it, of the mm-hmm. doors, before it went comprehensive. So that was the lower school, wasn't it? And then obviously we went up to the upper school. But even now you can see girls' entrance that side and boys' the other side. Which at the time I did think was weird, but that was how it was always done, wasn't it? Mm. And then,
did he teach all subjects?
Or? He was he did teach all subjects, but he was specialised in all the children that had the trouble, you know, learning, which he did right to the end, and he got quite high up in that then. So he had a passion for helping children, and he went 100% on everything he did for them. Mm-hmm. But then I can remember the cane in those days. If you were naughty, you did get the cane at the headmaster's office, didn't you? Do you remember? I can remember
it was threatened, but I never...
Oh, yeah, they had a slight tap on the hand, I think.
Yeah,
there was always a key on, wasn't it?
You must have been...
You did get the... Not, you know, just a slight, don't do it again. But yes, so that was happy days. And then... We haven't got to work-wise, have we?
No. My father was a fireman. After leaving the army, he had a job at John Seth, the woodworkers. But I think after military life, it was a bit of a job to settle down to doing something more mundane as a wood machinist. So he joined the fire brigade. I think he held the distinction of being the shortest fireman in Essex County Fire Brigade. He just scraped in. I can show you a picture if you like. And but he was a full-time fireman at Chelmsford, but he was a retained fireman at Maldon. Mm-hmm. he sort of brought her, because the rest of the firemen at the Morden station were all retained. So he brought a steadying hand to the ship because he was doing it all the time as a day job.
Mm.
Whereas they were all the other trades who were sort of all rushed to the call. But I do remember, you could never forget, that they were fitted in on the stairs wall, which was very thin, a bell. This called him into action in the middle of the night. And you remember it, and it was mounted on a piece of wood as how it came, with sort of two wires for the telecoms man, or post office man as it was, in to connect up. But the dome was roughly, I think it was probably 6 inches across with a very large clapping handle on the side.
It was massive.
And it was absolutely huge. There was no way you could sleep through it at all. So when this went off in the middle of the night, you did really peel yourself off the ceiling, and Dad would get up and you'd hear thundering downstairs. And because we lived that close to the fire station, you just hear these footsteps running up the road.
Because the station was in London, right?
Yes. It was in London Road, yes. Mm. It was in London Road. Do you remember it?
Just.
Yeah, yes. The Bill Houses, not house.
Yes, and there was sort of like a passageway down the sides that the fire engine sort of drove down and then turned round in the yard that was behind the houses.
Mm.
That's
how many engines were there?
There was, I think, there was definitely two, and I wonder if now there may have been three, but perhaps depending on resources. There's always two, and I think sometimes there was three. But the main pride and joy was this fire engine with the enormous wheels on the back, if you remember that. I think it was called, my father called it, the pump escape, which had a ladder, which they pulled down. That came later. That was in the 60s.
It slid up.
Yeah. And it was, they pulled it off the back of the fire engine, and it was on enormous wheels, probably 6 foot plus, and they could wheel it around, wind it up with a handle, no motors, and then a fireman could go up, and it didn't need to be lent against anything. It could be a freestanding ladder. And the other one was, called the pump. So basically it was a big pump on the back of a fire engine, and for which they would use something like the Weir Pond or anywhere they could get water. It had some water on it to get things going, but then they would look for other ways of extracting water from somewhere.
Do you remember any particular fires? Has he mentioned them?
He did mention, only ones when he was at Chelmsford.
Oh.
I think it was Newhall, I think was one that sort of, the school that's at Newhall. I think that was quite a major blaze. He has taken some photos, he did take some photographs, because he was the driver. Now the driver, everyone else was getting ready whilst they were going to the shout, as it was known, or to the emergency. But when he got there, he was the driver. So he would always keep a camera under the seat. So when he got there, before he got out and started doing it, he would quickly take a few photographs. And so we have some interesting photographs. I will show the photographs. My brother, who lives in Norfolk, has the suitcase. They're well stored, these photographs. But he has them in the suitcase. But there is some interesting photographs of fires that were sort of really sort of going full pelt at the time when he arrived.
We'd love to see them.
I thought
he might. An awful accident Christmas Eve. That was it.
He did go to one. He never really spoke about
it. Didn't say anything.
And I suppose when you're small, you don't really ask questions, do you?
No.
Dad's a fireman. That's what you did. But he did go to one on a Christmas Eve. And it was two young lads in a sports car, and they were driving home. They got all the presents in the back. It was Christmas Eve, it was late afternoon, and a lorry come the other way. This would probably be in the 60s. Unfortunately, the lorry tipped over as he came around one of the Vernon bends onto the sports car, and Dad was called in for the rescue. But both of these poor lads were killed, you know. And it did upset him quite a lot, as I remember. It's an upsetting situation, but if you're a fireman, that's what you do. The fact it was Christmas Eve, that was the thing that really sort of got to him, you see, and all the Christmas presents were in the back of the car. So that one certainly sort of affected him. But a lot of fires at the time, certainly around here, were chimney fires, because we all had an open fire. and people didn't clean the chimney as much as they should have done. The soot caught fire. Yes. Next thing you know, there's a fire roaring out of the chimney. So that was fairly standard. But I do remember at home, and Helen will say the same, that we had open fires. So above your fire in your lounge, or front room, as my mum would say, there's a sooty mark.
Yeah, and in the corners of the ceiling.
And of course, there's also a sooty mark above the open fire. And that was standard wherever we went. I remember going to my mate's house and saw a sooty mark here. Yeah. And the wind would blow, as my mum would say, it's blowing in the wrong direction. Suddenly the smoke would come out, you see, going the other way to what it should. Next thing I saw,
The Coleman used to come to the house.
Yes, the Coleman did come to the house. Did he come to your house?
Yes, we had a specially built area for it.
Oh, you did, yes.
Coal and Coke.
Yes. And they brought it by sack.
On their shoulders.
Yeah.
So it's really... Well, it doesn't happen anymore, does it?
We're no.
Over to...
But I think there was a lot of house fires. I remember... remember Dad was saying, when he went on a night shift, there was always a lot of his. I think perhaps firemen, you don't keep really hear the fire engine called out so much now, but it was a nightly occurrence then that the fire would spit, a spark would whip across the carpet, set fire to the carpet. Next, you know, you've got a house fire. Opposite where I lived in Gay Street, there was at the time, as I remember, a woodworkers. I think it was the building of the brew. It was always known as the brewery. I can't find any photographs at the moment. There may be some on the internet or something. It was the brewery, but it had been turned into a woodworkers. And they made, so the building was original. Nothing had been done to it probably since it was built in the 1880s. But they made wooden cabinets for televisions. In the old days, we had a very small screen. Lots of cabinet,
mm-hmm.
And they made these by hand virtually. There's some mechanisation and some attempt to sort of speed up the process, but they were all made by hand with blokes sort of saws and gluing away. Again, looking back, it was an absolute tragedy that this building was pulled down. At the top of the building, I think, was where the malt went in, so it was hauled up by someone. And then, because he made it his way down as the brewing process took place, and then out come the beer and what was left of the malt. But I need to see if I can find some photographs of that. It was a magnificent building, even I thought it was lovely. But that went when EEV, Electric Valve Company, moved in. And that would be in the 60s, because they had quite a sort of state-of-the-art factory at the time where they made valves. I don't know how many people use valves now, I think they've been superseded. But they made valves for the electrical industry for all sorts of purposes. And finally, they succumbed as valves are no longer needed, other sort of semiconductors and electronics that came in. So they then got what it is now, a small sort of estate of, what sort of houses do you call them? Sort of more for older people.
It's this Gate Street Mews.
Gate Street Mews, that's the one, yes.
Which is right opposite you, where you lived.
Which is right opposite where I lived, yes.
The run of houses on the...
Yes.
On the road, because there was no dirt course or anything,
no.
Was there?
Oh, going back to Gate Street number 12, where I lived, Dad decided that the floorboards needed replacing, they should be taken up. And I think they were all moving this way and that. But when they come up, the foundations of the house were very shallow. But underneath was lots and lots of oyster shells, which surprised us. But a little bit of research showed that oysters were the food of the poor man of the time. So around about the turn of the century, you know, if you didn't have much in the way of income, oysters were a mainstay food supply. And it was full of oyster shells. Surprised at the time, but when you looked into it, you could see why. But I think the road outside has gone up.
Yeah.
As time has gone on with resurfacing, whatever. So you sort of step down into the front room rather than go straight through. But I think it's because the road has gone up over the years.
But they were damp, didn't he? I can remember him putting another damp course further up because
there was no damp course really.
No, because it was built over.
There was no damp course. Then you sort of, I suppose you move on to SADS. I can't remember anybody from my class having an apprenticeship there, but they were a major employer, SADS. There's, strange enough, if you look across the river, there's some hoardings there now, but behind there's quite a bit of ground, which I think some developers wanted, but it's so polluted and so unstable that they can't use it. So I think the little retail part that's down there now was destined for this plot of land. But with the sawdust, the oil, the diesel, and all these other pollutants, no one can use it. But that's where it would have been. But I do remember all the ships coming up, which as a 10-year-old, they seemed quite big, but they come from the Baltic states, from Finland, Norway, and they would bring the wood right to SADS, right up the river, past the prom, and unload at the SADS itself. It was Baltic shipping, so they were just full of wood. I think with the silting up now, you'd never get anything of any size. But I suppose now, if you saw them, you'd sort of be quite amazed at how small these boats were. But when you were 10, they're huge. Everettie's was another big employer. They made batteries. We had a school trip there. And again, you should perhaps have taken more notice, but as a small boy, you don't. And I remember everything, every handrail that you touched, everything you touched was covered with carbon. And we all come out with black faces, black hands. The health and safety, the extraction of all this carbon dust that was floating around. Goodness knows if anyone ever made retirement, you know. That was probably, full of battery dust, you know. Bentalls, you must have heard about Bentalls. A huge employer, engineering employer. It's sad to think that we had all this industry, which was good industry, top of its tree industry, which has all been allowed to fritter away. Again, I don't know anyone. Oh, I do know some people that had an apprenticeship there, and it was a good apprenticeship as well. Drawing office, as welders, as all those sort of people, those sort of jobs which now don't seem to exist. There were skilled jobs. It's surprising when you see this in the Malden Burn when you're sort of younger, you don't take any notices that Bentalls is closing, Everettie's closing, EEB closing. It's meaningless to you as a youngster at the time. So, I think my father sort of broke the mould when he first became a fireman because he worked at Chelmsford. Yeah. No one worked at Chelmsford. They all worked in Malden. The fact that he went 10 miles up the road was extreme.
But it all ended, so everybody. Marconi's took most of the people from Malden, didn't they?
Well, eventually Marconi's did, yes.
We all went up there to work.
Yeah, so
were the trains still running then, or would they go by bus?
I used to get a car lift because I worked at Marconi's in the drawing office. So everybody seemed to go to Chelmsford, didn't they? I didn't know anybody. A load of shop work was local, but there wasn't much industry.
No, the big employers were Marconi, Crompton's, and one other. Crompton Parkinson. Yes.
Hoffman's
was one. And what was the other one? I can't remember. There was three main employers, and they employed thousands.
Yes.
Oh, Ransom, have I said that? Ransom, Hoffman and Pollard? Yeah. Yeah. So, Marconi's, Ransom, Hoffman and Pollard, and Crompton Parkinson. Marconi, forgot Marconi's.
Yeah. Marconi's, yeah, well, that's where I worked and trained. But your aunt worked at Hoffman's in the kitchens, didn't she, years ago?
Yes.
And then she worked in the kitchens at the hospital here at the end, didn't she?
Yes, she was working on the night that I was born.
Yes.
Because you couldn't plan it, could you?
And she lived two doors away from where Kevin lived, so it was very close family, wasn't it?
Mm. What was the hospital like in those days?
Weird, I should imagine, because she always tells stories about it, didn't it, that they were always doing sort of silly things in the kitchens, and because she worked in the kitchen. But it's hard work. I remember that. hopefully we'll still retain it, and it doesn't get knocked, we won't be knocked down. But all the stairs, because she used to say the stairs were all.
Yes. Yeah, I don't remember the hospital as such. It's always been there, obviously, but I don't really remember anything about the inside.
My grandma does, because I was pregnant with my first child, and my mother told her, she said, Helen will be going up to St Peter's. And she just looked at the workhouse. What's she done to be going? And she was terrified of the workhouse, because that was the workhouse. So we had to take, no, it's all right, it's a hospital now, and that's where you have your babies, everything's fine. But the horror was apparent. She did still believe it. And of course, I didn't have it with my first child. I had to go to Chelmsford in the end, because they only do straightforward things.
Yes.
But it has a lot of history, doesn't it?
Yes, my nana, so my grandma, she was terrified as she got older.
Yeah.
You're not going to put me in the workhouse.
We're so frightened.
And my dad and my uncle, my aunts, they've all said, no, it's a hospital. So if you have to go in, that's where you'll be going, because it's for older people. And it's absolutely sort of terrified and rigid, really, because she wasn't going to hospital already for some medical treatment. She was going to the workhouse, and she didn't want to go to the workhouse. She hadn't done anything wrong, so there was no need to go to the workhouse. And they couldn't really get that.
She never believed it.
She didn't believe it. She thought it was a plot, that the workhouse was where she would end up. And I think she always called it, and I've no idea why, she called it the spike. Have you heard that with others?
Mm.
You have, yes. I don't know why, but that was what she called it. And I've never been able to work out why she called it that name.
Because there was one down Market Hill as well.
There's one down Market Hill.
Which I didn't know about.
Predecessor.
Yes, I didn't realise there was one down Market Hill.
Yeah.
Took my friend brought book in at work with it all in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, so what did you two get up to for social life? What events happened?
Oh, yeah. What, as children or...?
Yeah, or as grown-ups.
Well, children was really Maldon was all... Everything was in Maldon, wasn't it, for us? As children.
Lots of fates. Do you remember lots of fates?
Oh, my mum helped at the carnival. She helped do teas for the touring the queens.
Yes.
So she did all that. They did a lot of work. They all joined in and helped. And I lived completely opposite to the park, so I could watch everything. And I was just thinking what was on there. There was something nearly every week. Gymkhanas, massive gymkhanas.
Where were they
going? In the park. Right, I watched it all from my bedroom window. So there was everything going on, but now it's very quiet, isn't it? Because we've all changed, haven't we? We can go out in our cars, whereas we didn't have a car to start with.
No.
So literally every big fate at Heybridge there was as well, wasn't there? Mm. My dad and their mum helped with that. Your mum loved the carnival, didn't she?
Yes. It was a big event, even as...
Baby shows. I've got a picture of Mum sitting there at the baby show. And then, of course, we had wonderful entertainment in the evening. You had the fireworks, but you also had the entertainment on the green.
Yes.
So you could spend the whole day going to the carnival and then going on in the evening.
And then you had more community because you didn't drive or didn't go very far.
And you knew most of the people that went as well.
There is another photograph, which I'm not sure my brother has got of Cherry Gardens, you know Cherry Gardens? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
When you're looking up from the bottom of Cherry Gardens at John Stores, looking up towards the water tower, there is one car up there, and that belonged to my uncle, and he had it because he was a mechanic. He'd been trained in the army as a mechanic, so he could look after the car, and that was his, and that's just one car. It's quite sort of surreal, really, when you see it now, you know, both sides of the road. So people didn't really move about much, didn't go anywhere, so... All entertainment, probably for all villages and small towns, it was all about the fete, the flower show. Tillingham had a big flower show, Southmouth had a big flower show, and we would go, my mum and dad would take me and my brother. But these were big events as well.
Mm. There's Gymkhana over there as well, big Gymkhana.
Yes. So we have lost a lot in that sort of way. The football, the local derby between Maldon and Heybridge was always... I never followed football, stood up for football. But that was always a huge occasion. You know, so much as reputations were at stake.
And then we used to go to the pictures, but Well, I used to go to the old pictures before it got pictures. Knocked down.
Yes, right, yeah.
Which was a wonderful building.
Which building was that?
It's up, what's it called?
The Embassy.
Embassy, yes, yes. It's lovely. You could go, because my mum used to meet my father there. They used to go and have a tea there and then they'd go and watch a film. So it'd been there quite a long while. And then it got knocked down and gone completely. The I can remember at school we used to have presentation day. And they had a Wurlitzer organ. It was always held in the cinema. And I could see Mrs. Cook rising from the floor, coming up, the music teacher playing the organ. It was amazing. What? And it's all gone now. I hope they didn't keep anything.
It was like something from Phantom of the Opera,
it
wasn't
was.
It?
It was. Because she's going... She's
quite a large woman, so everything was moving. And she rose gracefully from the floor, sort of playing away.
It was lovely. I wish we had a cinema now here. Because it got turned into accommodation, didn't it?
Yes.
So we lost it. And it was a beautiful shaped building. It was all curved and beautiful lights inside. It was lovely.
Yeah. But as we got older and you fell foul of the smoke, you know, some number six cigarettes, you would go in there and you would smoke away. And by the time you got 20 minutes into the film, you couldn't see the screen.
No, because you forget you can't.
Even the actors on the screen were coughing.
Yes, and that all went. So really, we just went to cinemas and with friends to pubs and that sort of thing, didn't we, courting?
But it was always game, really, to see if two people could buy an entrance. And then while the usherette wasn't looking, they would go down to the bottom, just either side of the screen, there's two fire exits, and open the fire exit and let a few more in, you see. So that was always fair game.
And then you forgot you got the lady with the ice cream who used to come round.
With the square box.
With the square box.
Yes, it was hung from her neck and it had all the melting ice creams by the time that by the time she'd left wherever she got them from. Yeah. And the beady glance or her stare, because she had a torch. And if someone's always giggling or talking, then this torch would swing around and get this stare from this sort of ferocious looking woman. You know, not me, it's probably him.
It's great.
I was just saying, it's a bit. I remember the past with happy times because they were family times. And now we're all so busy working and whatever that you don't get the time to do the family things like you used to. And I think we've lost out, really. The children have lost out, especially with going to the park, because they could go down the park. Now you can't let children go down the park on their own, so you were all more careful with everything because we have to be. They were freer then. Freer.
I think the carnival was a very big day in Morton's calendar. And there used to be lots of floats. You could be standing there for a good three quarters of an hour to an hour while these floats
were queued all around the rows. It was.
And all the local businesses would put a float in. So, lots of... Lots of cardboard and lots of plywood, lots of crepe paper as people...
And companies,
and companies did it. But all over Morden on Carnival Day, there was people hammering furiously and sticking and taping and painting make a float for whatever. There's must be lots of photographs out there. Yeah. You've probably seen quite a few.
I've got some, because I went to Brenda Goddard School of Dancing, which is ballet dancing, as a little one. And we used to always have a float, so we always dressed up with all our ballet stuff on and were on the float. For several years that was done.
Yes.
That anybody could go on in.
Yes, well, there's several scout. I think there's three scout groups involved, and each scout group would put a float in.
Yeah.
So everyone, youth clubs would put a float in.
Because there was lots of factories and places to put floats.
Yes. The best ones, obviously, the company sponsored ones, because their employers have been sort of beavering away perhaps that week before. So imagine a bit of rivalry between sort of Bentalls and EUV to see if we can conjure up the best float. And some of them were very, very good, it has to be said. But that was a big day, because then you had the entertainment in the evening. I think one year they came down from HMS Ganges with a mast. Mast that's up there now, or the broken mast up there now, but a sort of transportable mast. And all these young sailors sort of went up, as you've probably seen them. And did they display the whole campaign? They packed it and went off. So there was the entertainment was first class. I do remember watching some chap on the top of this very flexible pole, and he would sway this way,
implying he was drunk.
Yes, because it was a long way up as well. Seemed a long way up, even from the ground. And he was, I say, he would give the impression that he was inebriated, and he'd swing this way, and he'd almost touch the ground, he would come back up, and all go. So the quality of the entertainment, and then, of course, followed by the fireworks.
And a disco always, they had after that, didn't they?
Yeah, the fireworks were always huge. You've probably heard all this before, but the fireworks were quite a thing. They really were. They were worth travelling to. I think a lot of people did come into the town.
I was going to ask who was the audience, because Malden was very small, and it sounds as if so many people were in on the floats and everything. Who was?
I suppose in the '60s, Malden wasn't as big as it is now, but it was still a reasonable. Yeah. So don't forget, you had all the Haybridge lot coming in.
The side of the light for the Fantasia was packed, wasn't it? You had to get there to see the fireworks.
Oh yes.
And they always had a finale at the end, didn't they?
Yes.
Which was either a duck that was walking, or laying an egg, or an elephant going across, all done in fireworks on the back by the river. So, to remember it, it was really a very good time out.
Yes.
A lot of work went into running it as well, because it must have took a lot of organising.
I think on the phone you mentioned a mechanical.
Yes, that was my mother. I never saw it. I think it was performed by. I must have been too small. She said she saw a mechanical elephant going round the prom. And I thought, and she was quite old when she told me this, and I thought, I don't know. But a friend of mine verified, yes, there was one, and I don't know if it was linked to the carnival, or was it
a fairground
thing, I don't know. But it did literally walk round the prom, or it couldn't have been steam, could it? It must have been.
I don't know.
If she was telling it as truth, it was right. So there's lots of things that I don't know. Even your parents tell at the very end, but that's is that real? Are they sure that's right? But that was right.
My aunt, my
not
mother's
seen a photo of it though.
Yeah, my mother's sister. She remembers the elephants and was walking, coming into Malden on a train for the circus,
and then down High Street,
and then the elephants and other non-dangerous animals would follow behind all the way down to the prom. Where the circus was going to be.
Yes, well, we're living opposite. I used to walk across, they had the heads of the horses for the lions to eat. It was very nice. Oh, yes, there was all sorts of animals there, wasn't there?
I do remember just about going on a train from Malden to Walton on the Naze, changing at Witham. Hardly remember anything about the day, but at least I can say I went on the train from Malden to somewhere, which is strange now because the ring road runs beside it, doesn't it?
It was a Sunday school trip. On the train, I can remember that. And I can remember it being blown up as well. My father took a group of his children from school over to Brabble Power Station when it was being built. And one of the men that was taking them around, he said, would you like to stand inside where the nuclear reactor is going to be? Because obviously it wasn't there. He said, where it's going to be put in. He said, because it will not be uncovered again, I don't know how many years, won't ever probably be uncovered. So they actually saw it being built. But obviously.
Thousands of years.
No,
From the reactor.
He went and had a look at that and took the children to see it, which is interesting for him. I don't know what the children made of it, but now it's all sealed up, isn't it? And gone. But when you see it, it looks like something from an old James Bond film. It's all dials and really not like it would be now. It's not the same, is it? Yeah, so he did that. That was quite a trip to go on.
Tell us about the lake.
The lake, the marine lake, I think that probably been built when the prom was built, but it became a swimming lake. This was in the days before proper indoor pools, of course. Many people learned to swim there, but the health and safety wouldn't allow it now. But I do remember that as the summer got hotter, there'd be algae all around the edges, but people still swam. We didn't bother them at all. And the diving board, there was a lower board and an upper board. But when they emptied the lake, which was empty now and again, just to refresh the water from the river,
mm-hmm.
you realise that probably there's only about 2 metres between the water surface and the bottom, and people were hurling themselves off the up board and they're sort of bombing into the water, and there's virtually nothing underneath. And the little boating lake with the little sort of
paddle boats,
yeah. And the changing rooms, which were always very wet and very cold. I think you had to pay to use the changing rooms. I think you had to pay. But most people would just sort of hop about on the bank with a towel around them. You know, you save your sixpence there. Yes, it was. But it was always full of people. No one seemed to worry that what was lurking in there, no. What was living on there.
No, I used to go down after school because living so near to it, it was really important that I did learn to swim. So we used to take a picnic after school, go and sit down there and try and learn to swim, which I did. I can remember my dad saying, because it was quite lengths, wasn't there? Long, it was on concrete posts all the way around. And he said, if you can swim 10 of them, you'll get a lilo to swim on and float on. I thought, I wouldn't do it, but I did. I got one at the end of the swimming season, so I got a lilo. It was just a nice place to go, but the
yes.
people didn't worry too much. I think they did put chemicals in round the side of the
yes,
pool, because they used to go early down in huge jars to make some sort of health and safety.
Yeah.
But everybody didn't want the swimming pool not to go, though, did they? Wanted it to stay as it was. There was a big outcry when they said they're going to change it all.
Yes.
But maybe we have got a nice place for the children to go now, down the valley, which it used to be. Mm-hmm. And then obviously got the proper pool, and it is quite pretty now with the fountains.
I think a lot of parents set their children a test that if they could swim successfully without sort of disappearing from view altogether between the two diving boards.
Yep.
That was your test, that you could then go down the prom on your own.
Yeah, well, we went with friends, but the other one, which you said, and never go on the lake when it's frozen. No, I won't go on my own on the lake when it's frozen. So it was frozen, so I got on my friend's shoulders and went across the lake. So when I got back, he wasn't very impressed. I said, well, I didn't get on the lake. I was taken across the lake on somebody. I had no idea. It was a double weight going across. But I think it was quite deep then when they froze over.
I think they let the water out, but there were still sort of places where it was. Yeah. Yeah, so it was
deep-ish. We all survived.
Yes, you're still here.
Yeah, so we've got all the health and safety now, so we can't do that sort of thing.
Tell me about your father's piloting.
Well, he came from Burnham, and he was quite a bright little boy, so he did well at school. He could have gone into grammar school, but he didn't, because he didn't want to go into grammar school. So, well, he worked down Bradwell on the airfield, navvying down there to start with, all sorts of jobs he did. And somehow he decided he wanted to go into the Air Force when war. This is towards the end of the war. And he passed all the exams and duly went into the Air Force. He went to America to train to fly, and Canada. I've got photographs of Canada and America. And he always said he got his, not wings,
commission
on top of the Empire State Building, they found out. So whether that's true or not, I don't know. But just as he'd got qualified with his wings, I've got pictures, the war stopped, hence he was asked if he'd like to stay in the Air Force, and he said, no, I don't think I want to. And then he went on to do teacher training at Cambridge, which was like a crash course. And then, of course, he went into teaching and not into the Air Force, but he did have the choice. But he probably wouldn't have been here now if he'd have been actually flying in the war, because not many of them did.
Mm-hmm.